Verulam Sports.
Hello again and welcome to Verulam Sports Podcasting with your host, Tony Rice. Now, you know, I'm a fan of documentaries, had some great chats with John McKenna on recent memory. And I am therefore excited to learn all about a sequel to a fantastic hit documentary, Blacks Can't Swim, No Need to Reinvent the Wheel. This one is called Blacks Can't Swim, the sequel. And to tell us all about that, it's a pleasure to introduce to you, Ed Okora, not only producer of this fantastic documentary, he's got a crucial day job too. He is head of corporate partnerships for the Black Swimming Association. Well, hey, Ed, how you doing?
Not too bad. Nice, shall I say, Saturday morning. I almost forgot what day it was. This just all kind of rolled into one.
Time flies even faster when you're having fun, Ed. So there we go.
So they say.
First things first, and I'm excited to learn all about this fantastic documentary. I almost feel tempted to call it a mockumentary, but you'll be able to enlighten to me down the road. But just here and now. Okay. Head of Corporate Partnerships for the Black Swimming Association. Ed, please inform us all, what is the raison d'etre for the Black Swimming Association and how long have you guys been an entity?
We've been around since March 2020. So we're a baby, just over 1 year old. And so people, I've been asked a number of times various different questions with regards to the BSA, and the first question that comes up is, what is your end game? What's your main mission? And I give an answer which nobody usually expects, which is our aim is to not exist.
Nice. Because, of course, there are issues that we're going to unpack, which means that when that is resolved, there will be no need.
The mill for us, and that's basically it. So to just tell you a little bit about the Black Swimming Association, it's the first organisation in the UK set up to highlight the importance of water safety and drowning prevention in the Black and Asian communities. Mm-hmm. We are the bridge between the disengaged communities and the swim sector.
Yeah.
So we are there to bridge the gap.
Well, look, it is a vital mission, and I shall look forward to the day when I shake hands with you because you've achieved that very aim, Ed. But obviously, at this time, that's still a ways to go, isn't it?
Yes.
And I'm excited to learn all about the sequel, Blacks Can't Swim, literally the sequel, just in a moment. But let's put this into its proper context first and foremost, because there is a massive need for what you are all about just now, isn't it? Because, and this is shocking to me, I'm going to have to pause. I may need to repeat it because it is shocking. 95% of Black adults and 80% of Black children here in the UK cannot swim. I'm going to repeat that because it shocks me. 95% of Black adults and 80% of Black children cannot swim. I got to ask this question. It's a big one.
Just one slight correction, or shall I say, because we know that they do not swim.
Ah.
So we don't know whether they can or they cannot.
Do you know what
Sport England's figures state that 95% of Black adults and 80% of Black children do not swim.
Perfect. I thank you for the amendment there. And the reason I think that's crucial is, and Ed, you might be able to enlighten me here, perhaps it's one of those urban myths, but I've heard it told to me that if you take a newborn and literally threw it into the water, it ain't going to drown. Is that the case?
I don't know. I haven't done it before, but I've heard it said many times. And I've heard it many times that everyone can float. It's what makes us not be able to float is the fear, especially, because when the first time I actually went into the pool to learn how to swim, which was at the end of a film called Blacks Can't Swim. So anybody who's watched a film called Blacks Can't Swim, the scene at the end with me walking into the pool with my instructor there, that was not acting. That was real life. So you see the fear on my face. You see the horrific look on my face. That was not acting. That was me to be fair. And yeah, so basically, and I went into the water and mm-hmm. a little help, I think I managed to float, you know, a bit. So mm-hmm. basically, it's you know, yeah, so I'm pretty sure, yeah, baby, go back to your original question there. I'm pretty sure if you throw a baby, because baby has no apprehension, they've got no fear, nothing, you just put them in the water. And they will float. I mean, they're in the belly, in the stomach. They're in some water anyway, so yeah. So it's not for them. Yeah.
Well, look, Ed, let's take it back to that personal experience then, okay? Because sometimes it's best to illustrate it through personal experiences, okay? We're aware, aren't we, of the big panorama here, which is again yeah. why you're on this vital mission. But Ed, from your point of view, can you explain to me what were the barriers to swimming that you had to face and overcome literally before our eyes, putting it out there in this documentary?
Okay, the barriers, I had barriers, there were barriers, but I didn't even know that there were barriers because swimming was never part of my lifestyle. It was never part of, my parents didn't swim, my mom didn't swim, my dad didn't swim. So when I was growing up, swimming never actually featured in any part of my life. So there were the barriers where it wasn't the priority. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that's what I'll call the barrier. It was not a priority. And if it's not a priority, then you won't do it. And they say, I think the statistic says that if the parents don't swim, the child only has 13% chance of learning how to swim.
Just hit that stat just one more time.
If your mother and your father do not swim, or your parents do not swim, you only have 13% chance of learning how to swim.
Do you know what I think is really interesting about this? And again, I think it's going to be fascinating to discover in your wonderful sequel very soon. Actually, available, downloadable now, we'll build up to that. Is that there's a fascinating kind of interrelationship I've found between the grassroots and, of course, filtering up to the very highest, the elite. Because, yeah. of course, if we don't have the luck, the privilege, call it what you might, of that role model within the family scenario, then in order to kind of get inspired, we look up to the stars, don't we? And I love in the trailer where straight away it was announced, do you know what we need, if only we had a magic wand, some kind of equivalent to Usain Bolt to act as that inspiring figure. But again, this is the interrelationship. It's catch 22, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's true, because I speak, one of the co-founders, my partner, within the Black Swimmer Association is Alice Deering, the only black swimmer in Team GB. And I speak to her about this on a daily basis. And she says that if people could see more people like her mm-hmm. doing it, that it will inspire them to do it. Because right now we have all these stereotypes, we have all these stigmas mm-hmm. and the myths that black people cannot swim, black people mm-hmm. have heavy bones, and that kind of thing. Swimming is a white sport, it's not mm-hmm. a black sport, that kind of thing. But if the younger generation see people like Alice and swimming, and they see people like Stormzy swimming and all their stuff, they were like, hold on, this is not true. Everyone can swim. And that
they lied to us. They lied to us. We were sold a myth.
It dispels the myth. But there's also another factor. I was sitting in a meeting with one of the governing bodies, and I told them off. I said to them that if you want to get people swimming, and if you want to get a lot of people swimming, it doesn't matter what kind of race or culture, you need to change the message. Mm-hmm. So right now the message is, you need to learn how to swim because it's a life skill. Yeah. And if you don't learn how to swim, you're going to drown. So what do? I say, okay, if it's that dangerous, I'm just going to stay away from it. Mm-hmm. I ain't going to go nowhere near mm-hmm. it. But if you change it and you make swimming fun, you mm-hmm. make it excitable, you make it relatable, mm-hmm. people would want to swim. You wouldn't need to drag them there. Yeah. They will be coming, they'll be coming there in their numbers.
And just quickly. Just really quickly, because I think that's vital. And I love, Ed, the fact that you are instrumental in shifting this narrative, and you're doing that in a myriad of different ways. However, I think that is a repellent, you're right, to almost pitch fear. But let's not lose sight of the fact, as you appreciate, the situation as is means that people will drown if they're ever in that context, if that makes sense.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that I'm not just saying that people should just get up and go swim. Mm-hmm. But what I'm trying to say is, if you make it attractive to people, mm-hmm. people want to learn how to swim. And then obviously the message is there, you have to, you know, and we've been working with RNLI, who are one of our core partners, and we've just done an advert.
Okay.
And basically, it's based around, the weather's getting better, we're coming out of lockdown, people are going to go down to the beaches, and, you know, kind of stuff. And the biggest message that we put out there is that always go to lifeguarded beaches.
Mm-hmm.
If you see somebody in trouble, don't jump into the water.
Mm-hmm.
Call 999 or make as much noise as possible, or, you know, do not get in the water to go and try and save them. And always stick together, never swim alone.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the message that we're giving people, you know. So it's not just that go and swim or come out and swim, but there's a message there that you have to follow the guidelines. Yeah.
And that is sensible, isn't it? And it's about a very sensible approach to how to best have fun. Because I'm not an athlete. I am at best a doggy paddle merchant, quite frankly, but I do like to get in the pool. I find it good for fitness and what have you. But again, this core message, which is critical, is that we will respond. We will improve better when it is fun, but fun must be, I guess, not heroic,
but
sensibly applied.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's just like you learn how to drive. Driving is fun. I guess, you know, in the offices, it's a means to get from A to B. It's fun. But there's guidelines. You know, there's things you have to, you know, there's things that you have to do to stay safe on the road. So that's what we're working on. We're just trying to get people to see it as an enjoyment, you know. It has its health benefits as well, you know, the physical health, the mental health, and all that kind of things as well. But it's got to be enjoyable, because I don't care. The people don't care how good it is for the body. If you're not enjoying it, you're not going to show much, you know, interest in it.
You know, Ed, I totally agree with you wholeheartedly. But we, I guess, mustn't be naive about the extent of this mission, because you spoke candidly about your barriers, but there are barriers. Look, I would tick the box, white Caucasian. Right. But the black community have things that are maybe just psychological, and I get that, but they are factors. For instance, right, you know, you look at the natural body shape, generally speaking, of, say, a white person, a lady, maybe, just to illustrate the point, versus a black person. And obviously the nature of swimming is, you know, you're putting yourself out there physically, and the mind does it naturally. It compares and contrasts, doesn't it? So I guess that's an issue. Plus, the whole politics of hair thing is a very myriad interesting one, isn't it? Talk to me a little bit about those two factors.
Okay, as you can see, I don't have any hair, so I'm not talking from personal experience. But I have sisters, I have cousins, I have aunties, I have mum and all that kind of thing. And they spend a lot of time, money, effort on their hair. And then you just have to look at a black lady and you see the hair is a huge part of their personality, the way they're looking at that kind of thing. And we all know that chlorine has an effect on the water, or has an effect on the hair. So basically, a black woman gets into the pool, she does her swimming, another kind of thing, she comes out, she's going to have to spend half an hour of, you know, washing their hair, getting it right. So it's a chore. Mm. It's a long thing. So unless, of course, that person really, really, really wants to swim, they just wouldn't do it. Mm. And the problem is that our mothers are the ones most likely to take the children to the swimming pool. So if the mom's not going, then the children are not going, then the cycle continues.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have all these, you know, we have these waterproof headscarves and things. Sure. So hopefully it will change it will change the perception and people will start engaging in it a bit more. But then there's, like you mentioned, the body shapes and everything. So, and I've spoken to a lot of ladies who said, I go to shop and I buy swimming kit and it just doesn't work well with my figure because you know, it doesn't work with my hips. It doesn't work with me. So therefore, I just try and stay away from it. You know, that kind of thing.
If you're listening, I think there's a massive opportunity here because, you know, if you think about it and you know, that's a natural problem. But for every problem, there's a solution. If somebody were so inclined to design a bathing attire that was, let's say, Black, Afro-Caribbean, and also I would think this is a broader problem again for the diaspora from the subcontinent too. You know, there's some money to be made there, people. I'm just saying.
Yep. Put it out there. So there's a number of issues. There's so many issues, and we're trying to address them. But I think the biggest issue, which a film called Last Can Swim addressed, was it made it easier for us to have a conversation about it. We are having a conversation about something that which previously was very uncomfortable to talk about. So, which is a good thing. So, you know, now we're having the conversation, we're discussing it. It's going to change. People are going to hear more about it. And as time goes on, it's going to change the narrative.
Absolutely. And you are putting that out there, already done so with the first version, Blacks Can Swim, and now the sequel, as I say, you know, Blacks Can't Swim, the sequel, coming out, available on digital download, which I'm going to get in my life this very weekend, I'll have you know. However, I'm fascinated by the art form that is documentary making. And as always, as with most things, Ed, it's not just an individual effort. There's a whole team behind this. So first of all, talk to me about the relationship you've built up with the director here, Mr. Erix.
So how it started is that I had this idea to make a, the film called Last Can Swim. And the whole idea of the song was to highlight the issues with swimming within the Black community, but also get someone, a filmmaker, to make a film about it. So I said, make a film called Blacks Can't Swim. And what happened was a friend of mine said, why don't you make that film? So you put the song out there, people like the song, why don't you make that film? And I said to myself, that's an interesting thing to say because I've never made a film. I've never been to film school. I have nothing to do. The closest I've come to anything to do with a film was probably a music video.
Okay.
So I said, okay, but I know somebody who can make music videos, and that's Mr. Rex. So I went to him and I said, this is my idea. Let's do an extended video. It was actually going to be an extended music video.
Sure.
And then it came to the day of the film. I said, well, why don't we make a film? Then he paused a bit. He goes, make a film. I said, yeah. And there was a bit of a, he looked at me and was like, is this guy okay?
Oh, yes, so, indeed. Yeah, Ed Okoro is plenty fine today. I've had that little spark and I had to go and now we are ready. I love it, Ed.
Yeah, so then in the end we decided to just do a documentary, just interview people within the community who share the same issues and find out why they swim, why they don't swim, and all that kind of thing. And then the rest is history. But the whole idea when we're doing it in 2018, end of 2018, was to just put something, to create something, just stick it on YouTube and just move on from there. Little did I know that the issue was not just about myself. I was not the only one experiencing this issue. There was a whole world of people out there. So when we put that out to the trailer, it just went crazy. I was like, wow, okay, there's a big issue here. And it just progressed from there.
And do you know what that is called? Technically, that's when it resonates. And that's where I think you've got a bit of an indicator that you are onto something. And that's more than positive. So again, talking about the nature of your documentary, Blacks Can't Swim, available for digital download literally right now. It tells the narrative, flipping the bigger picture eventually, we hope, through two Black youths in South London, Layla, and is it K-Fast? And can you just tell me a little bit about their journey?
So basically, in the film, they've joined a community centre for children from a deprived background. And it teaches them about finance and sports and various different things. And just keep them on the straight and narrow.
Sure.
But one of the modules is swimming. But they just don't want to do it. So the gentleman who runs the community centre obviously he's heard about my journey. So he contacted me and says, Ed, I've heard about your journey and all that kind of thing, but I've got two youth here that I've got funding for this program and everything. And I've got two youth on there, but they just don't want
to get into
the water.
Sorry to cut you short and hold that thought. Therefore, Ed, literally what you're putting there in the role is a mentor, isn't it?
That's before, right.
We go back to the specificity of the documentary, can you just give me an insight as to how crucial mentors will be to this bigger mission?
Basically, well, and I'll give you an example. My daughter's 10 years old. My wife's Indian, or from Indian background. So you can see that you can picture, imagine the look of my daughter. When she first met Alice Deering, she was really excited.
Okay.
And I was like, why are you so excited? She goes, wow, somebody who's an elite swimmer who looks just like me.
Wow.
So you see, role models is very important. And like I said earlier on in the conversation, when you're being hit with all these stereotypes and stigmas that people, you can't swim because of your heavy bones and all this kind of thing, and yeah, you need something to inspire you to do it. So when you see someone looking like you doing it, that's the inspiration that you need. That, wow, he's doing it. The person I look up to is doing it. I can do it as well. So it's very, very important.
And in this fantastic documentary, which, as I say, I pledge I will get into my life Sunday. I've got a few things that I need to sort, not least of which, watching the FA Cup final a bit later on today. But in this fantastic documentary, Blacks Can't Swim, available for digital download, and no doubt you'll tell us how to do just that, because I need some help. But you as the mentor have to support and guide Layla and Kate. Fast. I don't want to get to too minutiae details, because we're teasing here. I want to get people excited, but just give us an idea of some of the fight back, I guess, to resistance to that needed challenge to tick that box that you guys have to work through.
So basically, I was told that they can swim, but they just don't want to get into it. And I went over and meet them, and they tell me that, yes, we don't want to get into the water. It's not till the end of the film do I find out the reason why they didn't want to get into the water, which obviously I'm not going to give away.
Hey, but listen, if you're interested though, Ed, how can we discover just that? And I will get it in my world on Sunday. What's the best download?
Sky Store. It's on Sky Store. It's on Apple TV. It's on YouTube, Google, YouTube, Vimeo, Rakuten, and Microsoft Xbox. So there's a world of choices. You can get them.
Nice. So yeah, I've got up from the top Sky Store, and then Apple TV and Vimeo. So I'm sure I'm going to sort myself this weekend. I can't wait for it, Ed.
But there's one example I give, and I always like to give this example because it's epic. So at the end of one of the scenes in the film, the whole of all the kids had to get into the pool. So up until then, there was been no pool scenes. It's just basically it's the dialogue, the interviews, and all those kind of thing. So I told them, and there's probably about 8-9 of them saying, "We have to go to the, we have to get in the pool. So I'm going to book a pool." And there was resistance. They say, "No, we don't want to go into the pool. You know, this is not something we want to do. You didn't tell us when we were signing up for the film that we're going to have to get into the pool and all that kind of thing." So I said to them, "Listen, we don't have to do any swimming. We just have to get into the pool." And then they came up with all these excuses like, "Oh, I don't have kits. I don't have goggles." I said, "Don't worry. Speedo is the partner of the BSA.
Nice.
The Black Swimming Association. So Speedo, come and give us just give me your sizes and you get all brand new kits. So you have no excuses." So long story short, I booked the pool from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 10 o'clock in the morning to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Saturday afternoon. And I said, "Meet me there." So they all came down.
Mm-hmm.
But what Mr. Rex and myself did was very, we had music playing. We had music playing. We had people there doing their hair. So we created this vibe. It was
nice.
Exciting. It was very, very exciting. And finally, they got into the pool, and they were just, so we shot the scene, they were just doing a little bit of splashing around. And then I left. But this is what happened. Half an hour later, after I had left, I get a call from Mr. Rex saying, is there any way you can extend the time for the pool? And I say, are we behind schedule or something? Because I thought we finished the filming. He goes, oh yeah, we finished. But the kids are having so much fun in the pool, they just don't want to get out of it.
Ed, real quick, I've got to tell you, I literally gave it the big, almost making the lorry noise. Because, you know, I just was amazed by that. That's a result, that's a touch. And it just proves the point, doesn't it? That there is no such thing as can't. There is only attitude and ability to relatively tackle challenges in a, of course, sensible fashion.
That's right. That's right.
Fantastic. And now I've written down Sky Store, Apple TV, Vimeo. It's going to be in my world this week, and I'm sure you've been exciting listening to this, and I'm sure you're fascinated to see with your own two good eyes this fantastic journey that the mentor, Ed Okora, playing Frank, leads Layla and K-Fast past their resistance into the pool, resulting in a lot of fun. So to get that into your world, Sky Store, Apple TV, Vimeo, and a world of others, reminders though, just in case people want to choose something different.
Raticon, Xbox, Google, yeah, those are the main ones.
You won't have any excuse not to find this. And so I urge you to do just that, because I think it's going to be fantastic. And I look forward to talking to Ed again, still a little bit more for today, but later on, once I have actually witnessed this, so we can actually talk nitty gritty. However, yes, that'd be, Ed, that'd be nice. Again, I just want to leave this as a bit of a tease, because I haven't got more details. But again, in the lack of role models, which we've analysed, and obviously at the moment the catch 22 with the only but one GB black swimming star, the next phase down, almost the bridge I suppose, is people like Michael Wallace and the great team at Kickoff at 3, who provide opportunities in a very fun, safe environment to get it on. And I know we're all building up to Swim Off at 3, which I'm super excited about.
I was about to say that yes, because yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, because all these things, these are the things that we need to, you know, to highlight it, you know. And it sounds like fun, you know, Swim Off at 3, Kickoff at 3. It's relative. So more people hear about this, more people want to get involved. And that's what we're going to use to need to change the narrative.
Absolutely. And that is what Michael is all about. It's been an honor and a privilege to come to know him incredibly well. He's a force of nature and just one of life's good guys. I'm excited to be involved in Swim Off at 3. It's coming very soon, no doubt this very summer. And as I said to you earlier, Ed, I am no a swimmer. I'm not even an athlete, really. You know, I can going to compete a bit, but you know, I'm certainly going to get my doggy paddle on when Swim Off at 3 is a real live thing, so I'm looking forward to that already. For people to learn more about the upcoming Swim Off at 3 and everything that Kickoff at 3 are all about, it's very easy. Just check out www.kickoff83.co.uk. I'll repeat that swiftly: www.kickoff83.co.uk. Ed, before I invite you to do a sort of signpost for more wider information on this vital mission, the Black Swimming Association's website, is there anything you'd like to add or tease about this phenomenal documentary which I'm going to get in my world this weekend?
There's about 16 people talking. Apart from the drama, the story part of it, which we've already talked about, there's interviews by about 16 young people talking about their fears, their anxieties, and the reason why they do. Some of them are very personal stories, and stuff. So it's something, and you always hear people asking, oh, so why don't people talk about it? Why? What's the reason behind this? Why is there a disproportionate amount of black people? This is your chance to listen to it, to hear people's, you know, personal stories and reasons why they do not swim and such. So yeah, so it's a must watch.
Well, like I say, I'm utterly committed. I'm really excited already for it, and I shall look forward to having a bit of a chinwagger with you. Maybe it's over a cappuccino or some such, just getting your take on particular moments. That's going to happen for me. I'm going to go Sky Store, Apple TV, Vimeo, but listen, it's available everywhere. Digital download. You're in the game. You're in the world. You know how to download. Very simple. Just however you choose to do so. Enjoy it. I'm sure you will. And what you're looking to find is Blacks Can't Swim, the sequel. I'm doing this a little bit backwards, but I'm sure this is going to be thrilling. But once I've seen this sequel, I'll probably go, well, how did it all originate and get Blacks Can't Swim into my world too? Hey, my Ed, it's been an utter pleasure to enjoy your company. I really value that you are a man on a mission, and I know you're committed to it. For people intrigued, maybe you want to get a little bit more fascinating information, what would be the best website to check out for the Black Swimming Association?
The Black Swimming Association is thebsa.co.uk. So it's thebsa.co.uk. But you can also go on to blackscantswim.com, mm-hmm. which will tell you more about the film and what we do.
Awesome. Just one more time, remind me of both of those websites.
Thebsa.co.uk for the Black Swimming Association, and blackscantswim.com for the films.
Utterly fantastic. Ed Okorah, Head of Corporate Partnerships for the Black Swimming Association, producer, writer, and superstar behind Blacks Can't Swim, the sequel, and of course, Blacks Can't Swim. For me, Tony Rice, it has been an utter pleasure to enjoy your company. Thank you for your time just now.
Thank you, Tony. It's been amazing. I really enjoyed it.